There's always there's always that girl, sometimes guy, but usually girl, who went to France for like 2 days and comes back and always just says, it's a croissant.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Shelby Lafreniere, who is an escapee from the cult of Scientology. She's going to tell us all about her personal experiences and how she left the church.
We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
It's me.
And Tim Wick.
Scientology.
Ooh.
Sorry, I felt like we needed a singy-songy bit.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
And our guest today is Shelby Lafreniere.
Yep, you got it.
I got it. All right. And Shelby, do you want to say you're a Scientology escapee? Or
I guess you could
survivor,
say that.
Scientology survivor.
I feel like is good. Escapee, I didn't feel like it was quite an escape, but something for sure.
Yeah,
something dramatic.
Not like an Ocean's 11 heist, but like a super low production, slow chase.
Like no one had to kidnap you to get you out of the Church of Scientology.
There was no motorcycle chase, which has happened to some.
But you have managed to escape, and in the sense
there's a motorcycle chase.
Yeah, oh man, of course now I can't remember his name. I think it's Mark something.
Okay.
I cannot remember his last name right now, but he wrote a really awesome book about his escape from Scientology. And in it, there's a motorcycle chase.
What?
But I won't spoil anymore. Yeah,
escape.
It was an amazing story. I mean, a real story.
This is real. There was really a motorcycle escape from Scientology.
He was in the Sea Org in the international base.
We just got mail from the Church of Scientology about the Sea Org and asking us to join and what our level of interest was in joining the Sea Org.
Where we thought we could be of use.
Yeah.
I joined for a time.
Really?
Did you?
Yeah, when I was 14, I dropped out of high school and moved to Los Angeles to join the Sea Org. My parents stayed in Minnesota here, and I had a guardian there. I had some people that we knew that lived there, and I also had some extended family.
Yeah.
And I was there. I signed the billionaire contract.
Oh, my God. So you're in breach of contract right now.
I am. I mean, they really tried. They really did say you need to follow this contract when I decided not to stay.
Wow.
But you start with this program called the Estates Project Force, or it's called the EPF.
Yeah.
And I was on it for, I think, about 3.5 weeks. And 1 week in, I said, this is not for me. I want to go home. I miss my family. I felt really bad about the way that I left my brother, who is 8 years younger than me. So math, he was 6 at the time.
Yeah,
I didn't feel like he understood, like, the cause I was championing by being there. And so he just missed me and was sad. So I wanted to come home, and that was a real struggle to come home. My mom ended up having to physically show up in Los Angeles before they would allow me to leave.
As a 14-year-old, you shouldn't have even been legally able to sign that billionaire contract.
Right? I mean, I may have had a guardian sign it with me.
I was going to say, you were raised Scientologist?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I was born into Scientology.
So your parents approve, like, allowing that to happen is pretty much...
My mom was raised in Scientology as well. So I'm a third generation Scientologist.
Not a lot of
many of us.
But your grandma or grandpa?
My grandma.
Grandma converted, I'm assuming, from something else or?
Yeah, my grandma has always been Christian, or she's always been open to other faiths, an explorer of sorts. And then she met my grandpa. I think she moved to California. I don't know how she exactly got into it, but she was in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
She learned about Scientology, moved to Los Angeles to be on staff there. But it wasn't the Sea Org at the time. It was just a staff position at the Celebrity Center. And then there she met my grandpa, who is also a staff member. Then they got married. And my mom, who was in Hawaii at the time, moved to join the Sea Org. And that's where she met my dad.
Okay. So your mom joined later. She wasn't.
She wasn't born into it, but okay. I think when she was like in her young teens is kind of, or it was younger. It was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so definitely like her mom was a Scientologist. Yeah, so yeah. She kind of
sure.
had to be. Yeah.
So can we back up for a second? Because I feel like we all really ought to, for somebody who's listening, who's like, Sea Org, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Perhaps we should find out what that means.
So do you want to talk about what Sea Org is in relation to the rest of the Church of Scientology?
Also, spoiler alert, Shelby's here because she was a Scientologist.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah.
We didn't really see
did
that.
We?
No.
We
dove right in.
Dove right in.
I sang Scientology. Scientology, though, so I feel like that was a hint.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good job.
You did. Also, probably the title of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got there.
You said it right. I was a Scientologist.
Yeah. Yeah.
No okay. longer.
Yeah.
That's a question I get a lot, by the way. When I bring it up and I talk about how Scientology is a cult, people are like, oh, so where do you stand with it now? And I'm like, obviously, I left. I just called it a cult.
Right? It's a cult, so it's awesome.
Yeah. Like, so I'm super into it. Yeah. Sorry, what was your... Oh, I was going to explain the
Sea Org. Yeah.
Okay, so the Sea Org...
And it's S-E-A.
Yeah, S-E-A, like the ocean. It was called the Sea Org because it was an organization quite literally on the sea. It was on a ship. I think it was called the Apollo. So L. Ron Hubbard, who's the founder of Scientology, my understanding is that he was like running away from the feds, like tax evasion kind of stuff. Yeah, went to international waters and started his group there. And it started as like a really... I want to say positive experience for a lot of people, although I also have heard that it sounds like it was very similar to what it is today, which is there are some really big highs and some really huge lows.
Sure, like any cult.
Yeah, like
there's
any
a reason
cult.
That yeah. get, there's a reason yeah. people are drawn to it.
Yeah,
and it's not just you know promise of an afterlife thing. It's yeah. it's there's a real world now. Draw.
Yeah, and you're like at sea and working on a ship while you're also studying this religion and things like that. So, yeah, so it's called the Sea Org because it was started on the sea, but eventually he came back to Florida, and the main base of Scientology is in Clearwater, Florida, and they call it the Mecca of Scientology. I don't really like that they call it that. I think it's a little...
Maybe a little bit of cultural appropriation?
Yes.
Maybe?
Yes.
They're just trying to make it clear that they are a real religion.
Yeah.
A Mecca, like a real religion does.
Yeah, fake religion wouldn't have a Mecca. Yeah. Right.
And it's in Clearwater, Florida.
Clearwater.
Because when I think Mecca, I think Clearwater, Florida.
I think Florida specifically. Yeah.
So was the town named Clearwater beforehand, I wonder? Or is that like their own... Because I know clear is like a big thing. Like,
Yeah, right. So for people who don't know, clear is like the state that you... So without getting too much into things, you've gotten rid of your reactive mind or your like subconscious mind. So now you're clear.
Oh, and you're that's thinking consciously.
Yeah, that's an attained state in Scientology. It's a really important step. And so that is actually really funny. I've never considered that.
Well, that explains... So that explains that sense of being clear only... I never realized it was only using your conscious mind. Like in that way, because that explains why they think they can fix mental health with or mental illness with just like being better, you know, like just don't do subconscious stuff, like have manic episodes, just be better than that and just use your brain for better powers.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Or I guess it's not to say that nothing subconscious ever happens, but not any negative subconscious things.
Oh, sure. Only the good subconscious stuff.
Yeah. Like, you know, of course you can continue breathing without thinking about it.
Well, right. Autonomous functions aside, it's more like you would never feel jealousy because that's, you're not consciously trying to do that.
Right. And so there's, after clear, there's the OT levels, which is operating Thetan. Thetan meaning your soul.
Okay.
And so there's all these levels on top of that. And so clear is you've gotten rid of your reactive mind or this subconscious mind. But all the levels above that handle the things like jealousy and like a whole slew of other things.
How many levels are there?
Well, currently, I think they're at up to OT8 at this point. they've been talking for a while about releasing OT9 and 10. But there are up to OT12. They just haven't been released.
What?
Do you suppose that my understanding is that each level, they get like money.
Yes,
from their
you gotta pay to get to the levels, Tim.
It's DLC, the religion.
Yeah.
Wouldn't then the higher levels mean, you know, they could get more money out of the people that have gone to higher levels.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, the higher levels, like OT7 and OT8, you're self-auditing, so you're auditing yourself, you're counseling yourself, you're doing everything by yourself. So imagine getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars and the church is doing nothing.
Or, like, your therapist is getting $200,000 like a month for you to just sit at home and do a workbook.
Yeah.
And talk to yourself about how you're so much better now.
Yeah, there's some supervision, but my understanding is that it's pretty minimal. My grandma was on OT7 for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And she did a lot of work at home.
Can you lose levels?
That's an interesting question because technically no, but they all the time are re-releasing new levels. So a lot of people were considered clear. They had attained the state of clear, but then they redefined the levels right below that. And so then told people, oh, sorry, but you're actually not clear. You need to redo these
things.
Oh,
wow.
My God.
Yeah. And it wasn't like, oh, we messed up. Here's this for free. It's like, oh, we messed up.
Pay for it.
Pay $250 or $800 or whatever it is that they ask for.
You're familiar with the clam bake stuff? So there are a bunch of former Scientologists who took all their information with them and tried to publish or make it available online.
Yeah.
So that to take the money out of the...
To make it independent.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. And that way, because... And they still believe in it. Mm-hmm. But they just thought that money should never be an obstacle to bettering yourself.
Exactly. Like, it's like, religion.
Right.
It's, yeah.
And there's a series of lawsuits and that sort of thing because the Church of Scientology has all this information copyrighted.
Right.
Or trademarked. That's,
They're business savvy.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
they are.
It makes sense why if your religion is based on secrets that you bestow to those that you think are worthy and can afford it, why they would be so protective of those secrets and why they would kind of be a secretive organization in a sense. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't know a lot of the details about Scientology, and I think some of that might be by design, it feels like, from the outside.
Oh, it's definitely by design. Scientology actually says... you can know too much too quickly. You can get to the point where if you know something before you're ready, it could literally kill you. Yeah. Like, it can literally make you sick and kill you.
So, okay, a lot of us that were raised Christian, particularly Catholic, but like any form of Christian, tend to have a lot of baggage from when we were young. As, like, little kids, you know, being brought up with this dogma. Like, do you have stuff like that? Are there things that were hardest to shake because, you know, you learned about, like, for, like, the concept of sin is something that a lot of ex-Christian atheists have a really hard time getting over.
Mm-hmm. Catholic guilt in general.
Yeah, or just the idea that there are things you can do that are bad, you know, not in the moral way, but that, like, you know, you can just think something and that can be bad enough, you know. Is there stuff like that with Scientology?
Definitely. I really hope, I mean, so I've been out of the cult since the end of 2009. So really, like, 8 years.
Yeah.
And so I really work hard to not have those kinds of biases anymore. But there's a lot of judgment that comes with Scientology. So my first ever job, my first real adult job and my first job out of the cult was like January 2010 I started. So like weeks after I had left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And people were like saying things like, good morning, how are you? And just being pleasant. And I was like, what the hell is this? Like,
really?
why is everyone saying good morning to me? Like, how? I thought it was nice, but I was just taken aback because when I was in the cult, you only said good morning to your seniors.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what? you just don't.
You would say good morning, sir, whether it was a man or a woman.
Do you even like say anything to anyone who is your peer or below?
I mean, maybe say hey.
Wow.
Or something.
Is good morning, that is like a formalized greeting?
Yeah, it's formal. Yeah, I mean, now I say good morning to everybody
right.
working in an office. I'm very used to saying that. But that was like the first thing that I was like, this is weird. And getting to know that like normal people were not only nice and pleasant, but actually like fulfilled in their lives also.
Yeah.
That was a huge deal too, because in Scientology, I never thought about leaving. I thought about leaving when I was in Florida. I thought about leaving that space and going back to my local org. Yeah. I wasn't in the Sea Org, but I was on staff at my local org training in Florida.
Okay.
So I thought about going back to my local org, but I'd never considered leaving Scientology because my understanding is like WOG people, which is like their like slang term for normal people.
So like muggles.
Like SPs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, persons. Muggles is a good comparison.
So WOG people are just people who don't know that they're not being SPs because they're not actively trying to tell you bad.
Yeah, they're just normal people not involved in Scientology.
They're just regular. Okay.
But it's kind of like W-O-G? Yeah, and it stands for Worthy Oriental Gentleman.
What?
Whoa!
What?
Yeah, and who knows what that means. I don't remember why
I've heard the term WOG before as like... It's I've heard it used as like one of the good ones in a racist way.
Oh.
But I've never heard it like which explains them using it for non-Scientologists.
Boy.
Like, oh, he's just a WOG. He's not an SP. Like he's not one of those thieving blacks.
But
he's one of the good ones. Like
sure.
We never used it that way. We never used it to say this is a good normal person and not an SP. It was just like a broad term for like, oh, like no, my friend Sally, she's a WOG.
Okay.
Just to say like, oh, she's not
outsider.
A Scientologist. Yeah, an outsider.
A Gentile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a Jew might say, he's a Gentile. Like whether or not they're Christian or atheist, they're just not a Jew.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you raised Scientologist, you tried Sea Org, you left only 8 years ago or so. I mean, that's how old are you now? If you don't,
I'm 20. Well, I'll be 28 in a week.
Okay.
So
happy birthday!
Thank you.
Most of your life, more than 2/3 of your life, you're in Scientology, in this cult, and only like as an adult have you kind of been out.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty defined line. I was 19 when we left, and so I had no plans for college. I was not planning on going to college. Actually, when I was in high school and they said, what college are you going to? I would just say like Florida University because I was going to Flag in Florida in Clearwater and I just didn't want to like talk to people about it.
Right.
It's very much like my childhood and my just like really early. And then suddenly I'm an adult and now I do adult things and work in an office and deal with normal people and WOGs.
You said we left.
Yeah.
Your whole family?
Most of my family. My immediate family. So there was, my brother was too young to really be in it. And my sister she had done a couple courses at the orgs, but wasn't really personally invested in it. Like kind of when you grow up in a Christian religion, but it's not really for you. That's what my sister was doing. So for me, I was the only kid who was like super hardcore in it. And I was like 100% in it.
Is your sister younger?
And then, she's 2 years younger.
Okay.
And then my mom and dad my mom and my stepdad, my dad had left 20 years prior.
Okay.
And then my grandma and grandpa were in it as well. And then I had a couple
aunts. And you guys all left?
Yeah. And wow. I had some aunts and uncles in California who were in Scientology and a grandma in Florida who's in Scientology. And I actually saw her when I was there a few times. But yeah, so my immediate family, all my Minnesota family left at the same time. But my aunt and uncle in California didn't leave and they're actually still involved.
Okay.
And they won't talk to me because I'm an SP.
Yeah.
And my grandma in Florida didn't leave either, and she ultimately passed away still in Scientology.
Can we explain what SP stands for, just because we've used it a few times?
Yeah. SP stands for suppressive person. That's a person who is actively working against the church in some manner.
That's
or working
us,
against working against society in general.
Yeah.
So the way that I was declared, one of the qualifications is that you've spoken out against Scientology in the media.
Nice. That's us for sure.
So here we are today. Definitely qualifies.
Oh, I'm raising the roof, radio people.
You are honorary SPs.
Yes.
Hell yeah. Was there
an event or like one thing that kind of caused your family to leave, or was it just something that built up over time? Or
I think it built up over time. I was really unaware of it because I was probably out of my whole family just the most invested, like emotionally or time-wise, I guess I would say. My parents and my grandparents, of course, had invested a lot more money into Scientology than I had. But I was on staff and, you know, I had like gone out of town to study it. So I was away and I think my grandpa had kind of noticed that. So L. Ron Hubbard's word, they don't think of him as a god, but it's like almost like a messiah.
He's like a prophet.
Yeah, a prophet.
He's like Joseph Smith or Muhammad or.
I mean, but not in the sense like Scientology doesn't really talk about God. And so they talk about the eighth dynamic or this like. Other, like, there's something out there, we don't know what it is.
You metaphysical, yourself,
yeah, like a higher power, but they don't name it. And so, nobody said like L. Ron Hubbard or LRH is channeling God, it was just kind of like, wow, this is a very, very intelligent man, kind of a thing like that.
Unlocked the mysteries of the universe,
and like, everything he says is right. And so, so he wrote a million policies and bulletins. And that is what makes up Scientology.
Yeah.
And so everything that he says is true. And so he wrote a policy about how you are not supposed to have fundraising picnics or doing things to raise money without some sort of exchange. So he said, if you want to make money for your org, you need to deliver services and like auditing services and courses. And you're not to just accept money for nothing.
Because you're not a church and like you can't. It's kind of amazing that he would write into the doctrine of your religion something to help avoid tax like problems.
Yeah,
it's kind of like capitalism, the religion.
Yeah,
like it feels like if there has to be like a transactional exchange of goods and services, Wow.
It's really interesting to hear your guys' perspective because to me, I was just like, well, you shouldn't take money for nothing. Anyway.
Right, but that's what all
churches
do.
It just seems like a thing that you shouldn't do.
But so like every Christian church, like you go there and they want your money.
Yeah.
And they're not giving you fuck for it. They're giving you anything.
They're giving you God, Molly.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, they're not giving you anything. There's no goods and there's no services.
Well, and L. Ron Hubbard had died before the tax, before they were legally declared a church.
Right.
Yeah.
Which makes sense that,
One could argue, I'm not making this argument, but one could argue that the service that's being provided is community and community space, maintaining the church itself, paying the people who write and perform the sermons.
You could argue that, but you don't have to because they're a church and you can just donate money to them for nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I'm saying.
What else, man?
They weren't a church when he was writing all this stuff.
So we got to back up because we haven't gotten to why your family left Scientology yet.
Yeah,
so what I meant to say is that he wrote that you're not supposed to be doing those kinds of fundraising barbecues is kind of the phrase people pull out of that. But of course, that's all that Scientology does nowadays is they say, oh, okay, you need to be part of the IAS, the International Association of Scientologists. And for that, you need to pay this amount of money. And then we give you this fake status. And then, or you need to just donate money for the building, or you need to donate money for this or that, or whatever it may be, with no services coming back to you.
Right.
And so my grandparents talked to my parents about that and they all kind of didn't feel comfortable with that. And I'm not sure who, I think my grandma maybe, brought it up to our local org. And ultimately, I mean, I think they may have brought up a couple other things as well, but that's the one that sticks in my mind. And ultimately, my grandma was like forced into a bunch of confessionals, essentially. So they're called Overt and Withhold, OW write-ups.
Okay.
So, like, Overt and Withhold. So it's basically a confessional.
Okay.
So, like, she's put on a machine. She has to hold, like, these two aluminum cans on the E-meter.
Yeah,
and she has to, like, tell them everything she's done against the church because clearly she's done something against the church because she has a bad opinion of
it. It's like an Inquisition.
It's like the witch trials. Yeah. Tell us all the ways that you've, like gone against God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my
It's exactly
gosh.
That. And so she had to pay for her own confessionals too,
because otherwise she would have gotten kicked out of the church, I'm sure.
Yes. Or been in a bad status in lower conditions, and there's a whole bunch of steps you have to get out of that.
Would they have to
expensive.
Lose levels?
Yes.
Is that a time when someone could lose levels, as if they're being seen as being against the church and not.
I don't think so. I've never seen someone say, hey, I know that you've attained this status of OT3, let's say. You're no longer OT3. Okay. I mean, they would say that you're not in good graces with the church, and they might say that. They might say now that you're an SP that, oh, you never really fully achieved the level just to kind of cover themselves. But I have not seen them say, okay, you have to go back down to clear at this point.
Wow.
Yeah. So there are kind of like remediation steps you would do. So if, let's say you're OT3 and you do something really terrible, they would take ethics and remediation steps to get you back to where you should be at that level rather than knocking you down couple levels.
Wow.
So,
but yeah, you got to pay for all of them.
Yes.
So they're not free. They're not like the church is like, we're going to help you get better. They're going to be like, you're going to pay us to help you get better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So when she was put to the question, I mean, more or less,
right?
And grilled in this fashion, that was it. That was when it was like,
Well, I think she did it for a while. I mean, she really wanted to make things better. But at some point, I don't know exactly what the tipping point was, but at some point they just decided enough is enough. They're not listening. They're clearly violating policy. We can't be a part of this anymore. A part of the church, not a part of Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in their minds, they were a little more of the independent Scientologists. But they decided to wait to actually leave until I had come home, because I was in Florida at the time in Clearwater. And I had a vacation scheduled. Like, before I went there, my dad said, I think I was a minor still when I left. And the only way that he would sign my papers was that I would be able to go on vacation to Mexico with him at this time.
Okay.
And so when that time rolled around, my parents just waited to say anything until I came home, because they knew if I knew about it in advance that I wouldn't be able to come home, because right before you leave, you have to do this routing out process. And part of that is they put you on an e-meter, and the ethics officer, or the master at arms is what it's called in the Sea Org.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. puts you on an e-meter and says, like, are you going to be returning? Do you have any intention of not returning? And like asks you, and you're hooked up to this machine that you totally believe works and will tell everything.
And even if you didn't, even if you thought you could get away with lying and it wasn't really a lie detector, you would have a very difficult time, because I'm assuming most of you are fairly young.
Right.
And this is an authority figure.
Well, and you want to be an honest Scientologist. Yeah. You know, you're not, like, if I wasn't actually trying to escape,
right,
I would have told them. Because, you know, I would want to handle, quote unquote, my family and make sure. And actually, that was part of it as well, because they said, oh, your dad, he hasn't been in Scientology for 20 years. So you need to fix that before you go home. And they said, you need to get him on a course or something like that. And so I called him and he was like, listen, like, I'm not going to do that. Like, and I was so upset, not that my dad wouldn't rejoin Scientology, but that they were trying to force me to, because this is a conversation I'd had with my dad for 20 years.
Sure.
Did that feel like something, you know, like people talk about when they leave any faith, any church that or cult, was that one of the first little, like, I guess, pebbles to drop that made you realize you were starting to question things, that you were mad at them for making you talk to your dad about it? Not that your dad wouldn't do it, but that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that at that time I would have said that I was, like, actually questioning anything, but it was the first time they asked me to do something that I felt was wrong.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's huge, though. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, because I had to stand up for myself and say, listen, this is not right. He's not going to do it. You're going to just cause more problems by trying to force it.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they let it go. But then I also had to call my mom, because apparently I had to handle, again, quote unquote, my mom, because I guess she had not shown up for some committee meetings, because she had, like... she was taking, like, they used the example that she was doing pole fitness. So she had gone to, like, a pole fitness class with her friends and, like, posted about it or something, because my mom's super into social media.
Sure.
And they were like, your mom is stripping and, like, doing all this other nonsense instead of going to her OT committee meetings. And so you need to handle your mom on this. So I called my mom and talked to her about it. And she is a very intelligent woman, and she knew exactly what was happening. She had been in the Sea Org herself, actually. Yeah. So she knew exactly what was happening and just kind of said what she needed to say for everything to be good.
Oh, wow.
So when they waited until you came home, and was it was it like, welcome home. We're not a part of this anymore. Did they invite you to also not be a part of it? Or
that was exactly it. I mean, wow. they said, well, okay, so I came home. And on Christmas Eve, I'll always remember because I hated my mom for ruining Christmas that year, not every year.
Sure. Yeah.
But she sat me down in my bedroom and she said, listen, you know, the family, like your dad and I and your grandparents, we have decided to leave the church. We've written a letter and we're sending it. We wanted to wait till you came home. The reason we're leaving is because of these fundraising policies and because yeah. we've learned that David Miscavige beats his staff. Yeah. David Miscavige is the current leader of the church.
Oh. I've heard about that.
Yeah. And I responded basically like, where the hell are you getting this information? Obviously, that's not true. Obviously, David yeah. Miscavige does not beat his staff. And I cannot believe right now that you're trying to completely ruin my life. Like, I was in Clearwater studying to be a minister and a counselor and a supervisor. So I was going to be a class 4 auditor.
You're being groomed.
Yeah. So I was going to be a teacher in a sense and a counselor and yeah. also a minister.
Yeah.
And like I had my whole life planned out as if it was going to be in the church. And so it was really upsetting to just like have the rug pulled out underneath me.
I mean, your mom is basically saying it's your family who you love
yeah.
or the church, which you love.
Well, like, not exactly. She did say, we will always love you and support you emotionally, but we can no longer support you financially.
Well, and the church wouldn't let you be loved or supported by them.
No.
If they weren't part of the church and you were, right?
I don't think so.
Have
I think.
Encouraged
no.
contact.
So she actually said, you know, we've written a letter to the church and we've told them, like, not to contact you. And they actually gave me a new phone with a new phone number as well.
Nice.
My mom did. Yeah.
They,
so
they
actually,
that.
They gifted me a phone right before I got on the plane. They sent a phone to my aunt, and my aunt gave it to me as like a present, a Christmas present.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. But bummer, this is a different number. Like, I've had the same number forever, you know. And I didn't realize at the time. And my mom was like, why don't you bring all your clothes home so you can wash them for free? And so I
wow.
brought like everything home.
They really knew what they needed.
So
yeah.
there wasn't a motorcycle chase, but there still was some espionage going on.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. My mom is crafty.
Yeah.
And,
I was very upset. They said, like I said, yeah, we'll support you, but not financially. We've not bought you a ticket back. And then I decided to get a job. That's why I got that job a couple weeks later.
Yeah.
And save money to go back. I fully intended to go back.
Ha.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, I didn't.
How long did that take before you decided? When did you change your mind?
It's hard to say. So I was really, I felt really guilty at first. I called the ethics officer, or the master at arms is what it's called in the CR.
Sorry,
yeah.
It's so great.
I know. It's so stupid.
This like burly shirtless dude in a room full
actually,
of
actually, this was a small Hungarian woman.
Wonderful.
Who was, by the way, 16 years old.
Oh my God.
What? Yeah. Yeah. But what? It's a Sea Org, and age doesn't matter in the Sea Org.
Not.
Yeah.
All that matters is
we're all Thetans and we're millions of years old.
Right, we're all
yeah.
just meat sacks right. filled with Thetans, right?
Yep. Like, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, I called her and I said, listen, I really need your help. My parents are being psychotic and I need to figure out what I need to do about this. And so I left her a voicemail, several voicemails. She did not call me back because they had already received the letter from my mom saying, if you contact my daughter in any way, I will expose you to the media.
See, maybe that's what we need to tell them.
Oh.
Yeah, just tell them you're the media. They'll yeah. stop leaving. They'll start yeah. leaving you alone. Yeah.
I am a podcast
yeah, well,
host
you know
with thousands
have?
Of listeners. Yeah. You should stop.
We have officially
well,
reported on you guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thousand of listeners,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So what changed your mind?
Yeah, so I felt guilty at first because I was just like luxuriating in this vacation where I just got to see my friends. I mean, I call it a vacation, but I was living a normal person's life.
Like working a job.
Like I was working, but I got to see my friends and I was only working 40 hours a week instead of like 100.
What?
And I was getting paid a normal wage for, you know, a person of my age at the time. I think it was only $10 an hour at the time. And I was like, look at me making money, saving money for a computer and stuff. And it was just, I was able to do what I wanted. My time was my own. And that was amazing. And I just really luxuriated in it. And I had kind of intended on going back. And then at some point, it just felt too late. And nobody was contacting me from the org, even though I had asked them to. Except for one person when I was on vacation with my dad. One person from the local org, she's the ethics officer there. She said, hey, you can come live with me if you want. And I said, no, I'm not going to come live with you. I am plenty fine living with my parents.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't trying to disconnect from my parents. And that's what she was insinuating.
And you were you a minor at this point?
No, at this point I was 19.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's interesting that because it's just because it sounds like all they really needed to do to get you back at that point was to try.
Yeah, I mean, like, really, seriously, all they had to do was try. And that's so many people's stories. They tried and they got them back. But I'm glad they didn't. But to answer your question, like what seriously made me change my mind is like a couple months into it, I think around March of 2010, the Tampa Bay Times, I think before they were St. Peter's. So they had a different name. Now they're the Tampa Bay Times, I think. They approached us. They'd been reporting on Scientology for a really, really long time. And they said, hey, we're doing an article on coerced abortion in Scientology. And we know that that's your guys' story as well. They had asked my mom to abort me when she was pregnant with me.
Wow.
Obviously, that's a whole nother story.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah. And would you guys like to participate? And so my mom approached me with it. And in this whole time, like, she'd had me meeting with other ex-Scientologists. It didn't really make a difference to me until I met someone. There are two sides of Scientology. There's the auditing side where you receive counseling, and there's the processing side where you receive counseling, and there's the training side where you learn to give counseling.
Sure.
So I did the training side and my parents did the processing side.
Okay.
You're supposed to do them simultaneously, but nobody does.
Okay.
And so it wasn't until I had met somebody else who had done the training side and who could communicate to me in that language where I was like, okay, maybe this is at least worth looking into. And you're right, you've made some good points. Mm-hmm. And so when my mom asked me if I wanted to do this article, I had to really think about it because I knew that if I did, that it would mean officially leaving Scientology.
Right.
And ultimately, I did decide to do it.
And I really into being an SP. Officially.
Yeah. And I really wanted to because I decided that I was leaving, and not that my parents had made me leave.
Good.
So that was important for me. My mom was prepping me for the interview, and this is one thing that I always remember. She was asking me, you know, at what point did you realize that what you went through were basic human rights abuses, because Scientology always says like we're all about human rights and we're trying to get human rights put in everywhere, but we had to like stay up till the middle of the night like cleaning bathrooms and like calling people in Australia to sell stuff and like having 15 minute meal breaks and rice and beans and things like that.
They fed you stuff that was also like not super, from what I've read anyway, like not super nutritious but like enough to keep you going so that you're
cheap calories.
You're malnourished and you don't realize it.
And now you have diarrhea.
And it breaks you down.
Which
is why you're cleaning the bathroom. Never mind.
Tim.
Yeah. So, I mean, when she asked me that, I just paused and I thought, oh my gosh, right now is the first time that I've ever even considered that. And that was the moment for me where I was like, yep, for sure, I'm out of this shithole. Like, I'm never going back.
That's some high-level brainwashing shit that they're engaged in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we're so happy that you made it out and that you came to talk to us about it, too. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's kind of an enlightening and terrifying glance behind the curtain.
I think it's easy to make I think it's easy to make jokes about Xenu and Thetans and like, oh, Scientologists believe in aliens. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, they were started by a sci-fi writer and he wasn't even very good. And like, you know, Starship Troopers and stuff.
Yeah.
But like realizing the day-to-day.
Starship Troopers is Heinlein.
Okay. Realizing like the day-to-day. What's the
Battleship Earth.
Battleship Earth. That's the one I meant. Realizing that there's like day-to-day human rights abuses.
Yeah.
But there's people who are genuinely suffering, mm-hmm. and not just like in a mental, emotional way, but there are people who are genuinely suffering by all measures, mm-hmm. you know, across the globe, mm-hmm. because of this organization, and it makes it a lot less funny.
It's a real, you know, it's a real human cost.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot more in Sea organizations. So they have some in Europe, they have one in Florida, they have one in California, or they have several in California. So you see those human rights abuses mm-hmm. much more in those kinds
on
of areas.
Side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily on the employee side.
Okay.
And so when you've committed your life to them, you
of
know,
course.
And now they can take advantage.
Right. Now that they know they've got you.
Mm-hmm.
But
in a normal organization, by normal, I mean class five organizations, what they're called, like your local church.
Chapter.
Yeah. They definitely have a lot of pressure for fundraising and things like that, but they don't have control over your meals. They don't have control over what time you go to sleep. You have a certain set of hours. So there's less of that just because they don't have that. And would you mind if I divert to Xenu for a moment?
Please do,
sure,
please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's divert to Xenu.
Yeah. Because that's something that, as an ex-Scientologist, that's like people's first thing they think about. It's like,
sure.
Oh, Scientology,
totally.
They totally believe
South
in Xenu.
Yeah.
But I did not hear about Xenu until I left Scientology.
Yeah.
And that is one of my biggest pet peeves, that's what people think about. And I'm like, there's so much crazy in the day-to-day. And there's so much crazy in like all the fundraising and the human rights abuses and all the like emotional manipulation, just everything, that like Xenu is like weird sci-fi stuff, but it is not part of most people's experience. You don't learn about that till OT3, which most Scientologists don't make it to.
Wow.
And so I just never heard of it. And so I just want people to know that while that is definitely a crazy, crazy part of Scientology, it is not part of people's daily experience.
And there's way worse things that are.
Yeah, I would like to see more reporting on those day-to-day kind of activities, because Xenu sounds crazy, but it's not hurting anyone really.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure.
But the other stuff is harmful in so many ways. Yeah,
absolutely.
Wow. We're going to go to our five questions.
I'm ready.
Thank you,
so
again.
Ready. These are questions specifically tailored to SPs like us. So.
Yeah.
Molly, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Question one. What is a conspiracy theory that you find the most interesting or compelling? You don't have to believe in it. Just something that you think is like super weird.
So I don't know about a lot of conspiracies. I think I've been listening to a podcast lately which talks a lot about people in the flat earth stuff. And I think that's really interesting, because they try to prove that the earth is round, and they work with flat earthers to develop good tests to see which it is.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's really interesting. But really, I think it would have to be, it just baffles me when people say we haven't landed on the moon.
Yeah.
Right.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. And like,
seems like faking it would be a lot more work.
I know.
I mean, honestly.
And they point to the first moon landing and they're like, no, we faked that one. You're like, cool. What about all the other times since then that we've sent stuff to that we've done? And then they're like, all faked.
There are reflectors that you can bounce light off of.
No.
On the moon.
On the moon. You can get the light back.
Nope.
Oh.
Fake.
Yeah.
They placed trickery during one of the moon landings.
Nah, trickery. There was never any moon landing.
It's
Tim.
Just reflected off the atmosphere. I don't know. Fuck it. All right. Question number two. What would be your perfect 2-week vacation? Money is no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
I would say it would have like somewhere just really kind of random. Like I'm engaged.
Ah,
and thank you. And we're kind of talking about our honeymoon right now. And I'm like, let's just go to like, Iceland or something. And not that Iceland is completely random, but it's just somewhere that I wouldn't normally plan a vacation to. So like Iceland or Europe or somewhere where you can just kind of explore, I think would be great.
Awesome.
Sure. I'm in.
I love it.
I like that. Question three, what's a movie or a book that changed your life? How or why?
Oh, I really like The Giver. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, can I choose two?
Yes.
Okay, so The Giver, because I just have always been obsessed with that book, and now I wonder, like, is it because it's kind of culty, and I've always
it is a little culty.
I kind of wonder if that's why I've always been kind of drawn to it, but I've read it, like, four times, I think, and we have it, and I've seen the movie, and I just love it.
There's definitely, like, it definitely has a sense of terms and stuff that feels very, like, everyone in this community has a shared jargon, and the other people don't understand it.
So there's that, and also Alice in Wonderland, because in Scientology, that book is used all the time for training drills.
What?
I have, I wouldn't say I have it memorized, but I know so much about that book. I have read that book thousands of times.
What?
Hang on, training drill? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're in the middle.
Yeah, I gotta understand this.
Yeah, okay, so basically Scientology really emphasizes communication, and so you do a lot of communication drills called training drills or training routines. They call them TRs for short.
Okay.
So there's like TR zero all the way through TR. Well, there's a lot of TRs, but the basic ones are zero through four.
Okay.
And there's a whole range of things that you do. But for the ones where you have to actually speak, because not all of the communication drills you're speaking, the ones you have to actually speak, instead of trying to come up with a line in your brain, because that's not the point, it's how you deliver it, you read it from Alice in Wonderland.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really wish I could find out what Lewis Carroll would think of Scientology.
That's like the quick red fox jumped over the lazy dog type thing, but just for practicing your
I think it's because they have a lot of quotes. There's a lot of communication. There's a lot of short sentences in that book. Mm.
Oh, man, that's so
interesting.
Cool.
Is it back to me?
Back to Molly.
All right.
Question number four. What is the geekiest thing you have ever done or said?
So I have an Instagram account and I have so rarely used it. And the first thing I ever posted, or the first couple things I ever posted, was about the game Dragonvale.
What?
Which is like a phone app where you hatch dragons and you breed them.
I've seen it advertised to me, but I've never played it.
Yeah, I mean, I played it. It's the only app that I've spent money on ever, and it's the reason why I will never spend money on an app again.
Yeah,
but it was really fun, and I don't remember what I said, but I definitely remember I posted about playing Dragonvale.
You're into it. That was your thing for a while.
That's great.
That's awesome.
Forever your first.
I mean, you can't take that back, and because I have so many, so few posts, like, it's really there for people to see.
Do we have any posts on our Instagram account yet?
No.
Not yet.
I made the account last time we recorded.
We started the last time we recorded, but
we were joking about taking pictures of where God isn't, and that's what Instagram.
We just have to do it. Right now,
I mean,
God
I've got a lot of pictures on my phone where God is.
We can take right now.
Right now, God is definitely not on our Instagram account. That's for sure. So question number five, what is your favorite hangover cure?
Oh, man. I don't have good cures. Nothing exciting. I would just say sleep.
That's
good. And eat greasy food.
Yeah.
So are you allowed to drink in the Church of Scientology?
That's it. Yeah. I mean, you are, but I think it's kind of like everything in moderation.
Sure,
like, if you were getting hammered all the time, people would be like, what the hell, man?
So there aren't any, like, Scientology hangover cures that you guys know of or anything?
No, but I think the reason well, first of all, I was under 21 when I was in Scientology. And I was a strict rule follower, so
Same.
I was not drinking. But I think also it's kind of like, if you're out drinking, if you have that kind of free time, you should be in the church. You should be doing something in the church. So if you have the free time to participate in activities like that, you should be in the church or studying Scientology.
So you're having fun. Mm-hmm. And see, fun means you have time.
Yeah,
time
exactly. That's exactly
that's
the point.
That's the real sin.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh,
this is amazing. I wish we had 5 more hours.
I know.
It's, there's so much there. It's so bizarre. But thank you so much, Shelby, for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoy sharing, so I love answering people's questions. Yeah.
I'm glad you're out there and being vocal about it, about your experiences there. I think, like you said, the first thing people think of is Xenu, and there's all this other stuff that is really the more bizarre and more harmful aspects that are easy to gloss over because, hey, aliens, that's funny.
Yeah.
Totally. So, we're Geeks Without God.
I have a Patreon supporter.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Please.
I do. We have a new Patreon supporter. We have for a while, but I keep forgetting to announce the name of Jeff Polier.
Jeff
Polier. I'm not sure which. It is one of those names similar to Shelby's where it could be pronounced either way. But thank you, Jeff, for contributing. Oh, my God. It's like I'm Mark Weed on the
podcast. Oh, you're the worst.
Thank you for contributing to our Patreon.
If you contribute and support us on Patreon, you support things like these new fancy microphones that we have that we're recording with. You pay our web hosting, domain registration, all that good stuff. And if you throw us a couple bucks a month, you get to listen to all these episodes early. As soon as we're done editing them and have them put together, we put them up on Patreon and you can listen to them.
Special episodes.
Plus special episodes, which we're working on another one right now. So you'll
Patreon hear supporter only.
Ooh.
Exclusive. Yeah.
Luxury.
But otherwise,
finest.
We've been Geeks Without God, and we'll have another episode up next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye. Join us next time on Geeks Without God for Tales of Suppressive Persons.
We're Geeks Without God. We're Geeks Without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Now wait, hold on. What's this thing?